I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Sam Shellstad joins me now. The writer recently published a short story collection, his first, Cop House. I'll ask Mr. Shellstad about his writing, the characters therein, as well as the themes in his stories. Sam Shellstad's stories have appeared in The New Quarterly, Joyland, Prism International, Carousel, The Puritan, The Feathertail Review, The Dalhousie Review, and The Rusty Toque. In 2014, he was longlisted for the CBC Short Story Prize and a runner-up for the Thomas Morton Memorial Prize. He's a contributor to McSweeney's Internet Tendency. Cop House is published by Knightwood Editions. Please welcome to the Plunt Online program, Sam Shellstad. Mr. Shellstad, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Are you originally from British Columbia?
No. I'm from London, Ontario. That's where I grew up. But I did go to school twice in Victoria.
I see.
Yeah, so yeah. I did the first couple years of my undergrad there, and then I did an MFA at University of Victoria.
And you live in Toronto, I guess. How long have you done that?
After I finished at UVic, my wife and I moved to Hamilton for a couple years, and then a year and a half ago, we moved to Toronto.
So. I don't know. I assumed you did spend some time in British Columbia because your publisher is from British Columbia, but then some of the stories are specifically set in places in Ontario. Is that right?
Yeah. I think having spent most of my life in Ontario, that's just things end up getting set there a lot.
Yeah. Is that important, the setting itself? Like, I mean, there's certain references to Etobicoke, Montreal. I guess that does play a role in where the story takes place. Otherwise, you wouldn't mention it, or you could just say, you wouldn't say where it takes place.
Right. Yeah, I think when I start writing a story, I'll have some sort of idea of maybe about the characters or the plot and the setting, kind of where would it make most sense to be set? Where would it be most interesting to take place there? And I kind of have an idea of a place in mind, and that's definitely can be a big part of the story.
Something that I've been thinking about in certain stories, because there are, I can't remember how many stories there are in the book. 16, is that right?
Yeah, I think 16.
Yeah. Yep. These places that are, these stories that are specifically set in Ontario, I've never been there. I've lived in British Columbia my whole life. And so I have a sense of what it's like to live there from...
Specifically from my book.
Yeah, but probably in some cases, you know. Like, so one wonders then, because you've lived out here, and you live there now, and you grew up there. I mean, it does it feel Canadian at all?
The book?
Or the place, like the certain places where you've lived in Ontario and opposed to here in British Columbia? I mean, Victoria is a beautiful place. It's a place that a lot of people in this country go to retire.
Yeah.
It's still the same country, is it? Or are we that different? Because this is a big country, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Ontario feels like Canada to me, just because I grew up here.
Yeah.
It does. And I think the only real difference is people say my name differently out west. So out here I'm Sam, and then out there I'm Sam. There's like a little British inflection in my name. And they say, I feel like here we say pants, and there it's pants.
Yeah, or trousers in some places, right?
Oh, I haven't had that. I like that.
It depends where who you're talking to, I guess, in terms of how old-fashioned they are, probably. I guess the best way to talk about your book is, because it is a short story collection, is to ask the author himself how he'd describe it. I mean, it is the first collection.
Yeah.
If people ask, well, what kind of stories do you write, Sam, what would you tell them?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say it is a first collection, and I think with a lot of first collections, there's people have built up stories throughout their career up until that point, so that's why there's 16 stories in it. If I ever put out another collection, it would probably have less, just because I went through all of my stories that I built up and picked the best ones and the ones I thought fit together. So there is a lot in it, 16 stories. Some of them are quite short, some of them are a little longer. But there's definitely, like, humor plays a role in it. I can't help but kind of put jokes in there. Mm-hmm. They're funny. I guess they're kind of weird. I try to write about interesting characters, not just, like, ordinary people, but people that maybe have neurotic sensibilities or have some sort of psychologically disturbed mission that they're on. Or, that's kind of that's my ramshackle way of summing it up. They're funny and there's weird people in it, and it's the first collection.
Yeah. Well, how do you decide what makes it in a collection like this? I mean, I guess other than the difference in size of story, because as you said, some of them are short, some of them are longer. There is a variety, isn't there, in terms of the kind of stuff you write.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think, I think for me it was, the first thing was when I wanted to put together a collection was just picking first the best stories, like the stuff that maybe it's been published, maybe it hasn't, but I've written it, it's been out for a while, mm-hmm. and do I still enjoy it? Am I still proud of it? So I just picked all of my favorite stories, and then I kind of just read through and just intuitively picked which ones kind of worked together. Like, could I see them sitting in the same book? And there was definitely some stories that I'm proud of and still like that didn't make it to the book just because they didn't feel like they would make sense with the other stories.
And does when you're putting a book together, do you decide the order that the stories are put in?
I did when I sent it out, and one of the notes from the editor was immediately wanted to change the order of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I bristled against that initially. I was like, no, I picked the perfect order, but then eventually realized, oh no, like I've completely had it in the wrong order. I had one of the most difficult stories first, which was just completely turned people off. I don't know if you, did you read the story, New Ice Kingdom, about the polar bear?
Yeah.
So that one, it's written in this, like a polar bear language I made up, and it's kind of, you have to sort of read it for a while to get into the rhythm of it. And for some reason, I wanted to have that story first, and the editor was like, that's kind of the worst story to put first. So,
yeah, I guess people would.
Things like that.
Yeah, people would think that the whole book is like that.
Yeah.
And then not. But the funny thing is about your book is I read it, I didn't read it in order. Well, I read the first story,
mm-hmm.
and then I went to something else. And then I went back and I think I read everything because I went back and I picked out things that I wanted to, you know, because I had a certain amount of time, I could fit something in, say. I mean, does that worry you that someone will read it out of order?
No, because that's how I read short story collections, too. I kind of like to, I usually like to read the first story first. Just the author obviously picked that, and it's a good introduction, but certain titles will draw my eye or something. And so I picked this. I kind of like the way it flows if you read it in order, but I wouldn't expect anyone to. I think maybe someone will be intrigued by a title and skip ahead, and I kind of like that.
I was just thinking as well that some of us are now reading on devices,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if those people are able to read the book wherever they want to start it.
Yeah, you can do that. You can click on the story and
write
through it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess I've avoided reading things on devices for so long that I'm so used to reading in a book. I just find it just excellent that you can flip through and see not just the titles, but if the certain words jump out as you're flipping through, and then you say, well, I want to read that, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. When I talk to authors, I'm always curious to know about their process, and I guess for a short story writer, Is that different than writing anything else, whether it's a novel or something, say, in nonfiction?
Oh, yes, definitely. I just finished the first draft of a novel I've been working on for a while. And it's completely different. When you're working on a novel, it takes so much time. It takes so long, and there's kind of the stakes are high, because, like, what if I wasted a couple years writing this terrible novel? Whereas when you write short stories, you can get them. Like, sometimes they take a while, but sometimes you can sort of churn them out pretty quickly. Like, some of the stories in this collection are written in, like, a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so the stakes are lower, because if it's a bad story at the end, it's not a big deal. Whereas, you know, if you spend, say, 3 years writing a novel and you're not happy with it after, you learn a lot from it, and that's great, but you just really want it to be good. Whereas when I write a short story, I don't really care about how good it is. I just write what I want to, and then hopefully it turns out good.
Well, what's the business like for a short story writer? In your bio, you've been published in numerous publications. Is it? I mean, how does it work? Do you get commission, say, or do you write something and then send it off and hope it gets published somewhere?
Yeah, I just write the stories, and when I feel like a story is finished, I'll send it off to a magazine and forget about it, go to the next one. When that's ready, send it off, forget about it. And I keep track of it in a file on my computer.
Uh-huh.
And it's really fun, because you do kind of forget about it. And then when you get an email saying your story's been accepted, you're like, oh, that's great. Found a home. And then it inspires you to work on the next one. And it's been a while since the book came out. I've been working on this novel, so I haven't been writing short stories, and I miss sending them out. It's fun to end up.
Yeah. By the way, so because you've spent some time writing a novel and you've obviously spent time previously writing the stories for this book, writing short stories, I should say, do any of the habits that one has as a writer, do those change any, depending on the genre, say, that they're writing in?
You mean, like, just the practical habits of sitting down to write?
Yeah. Because some poets say they like writing in coffee shops as opposed to at home where they like writing, say, a novel or something in fiction.
Right. It's pretty similar. I think when I was writing the stories, I would have kind of a routine. I'd write in the morning. I'd set aside, you know, a couple hours, maybe go back to writing later in the afternoon if I had time. And with a novel, it's the same, but it's much more... for me, regimented. Like, I have to keep working on it almost every day, and otherwise I kind of lose the thread.
Mm-hmm.
And it just helps to have a practice of keep returning every day to the novel and picking away at it. Whereas with short stories, you can kind of take breaks, work on other things, jump between stories.
Yeah. The characters in Cop House are, as I was telling you before we started, just fascinating. Some of them are hard to like. And you mentioned a moment ago that some of them have neurotic sensibilities. They also have as you said, you infuse the stories with your humor, and it's often very funny. When you think of these characters, someone might think of them as odd. Do you have to like them?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of fiction I enjoy is not necessarily about likable characters. I think to some extent you have to care about them or care about what happens to them, even if you don't like them. Like, for instance, there's the first story in the book is about kind of a creepy stalker.
Yeah.
From his perspective. And it's written in sort of a way that I think is funny, and you're kind of wondering what he's up to. It's just for the listener, the story is about someone who's written a letter of apology and explanation mm-hmm. to a woman and left it on her doorstep after he's broken into her house. And, you know, it's hard to like that kind of person. He's horrible. But
yeah.
Hearing about how he came to that point you sort of care about hearing about why, even if you don't like him. And I think if you don't care at all about the character, it's kind of hard to get invested in the story. So there has to be some sort of investment in at least finding out why they are like that.
And I guess you do have to have some, I don't know, sympathy is the right word, but because you are spending a lot of time with them, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And that character in particular in the first story, like a blind man is the name of the story.
Yeah.
Was that fun? Because it is often very funny, but at the same time, yeah, you're wondering if you should laugh because the guy is seriously. I mean, the guy is in trouble, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I kind of like that kind of finding that line between where something is funny or just horrible. You know, there's the title story, Cop House. I remember when I had that first published in a magazine. It was published in The Puritan, and a lot of people wrote to me or told me that they thought it was so funny, and oh, that's just such a funny story. And then I had other people come up and just say, oh, what a sad story. That's just horrifying. And I kind of liked hearing it from both ways. And how do you make something so dark? How do you make someone laugh from that? Or if something is ridiculous or silly and funny, like, how do you put real emotion into that? And I kind of like trying to fuse those worlds.
Yeah, and I guess because one usually reads to themselves, I guess they can laugh in all the inappropriate parts that say you couldn't laugh out loud in public, say, or you were with someone else.
Sure.
Yeah, So is there much of a leap then in terms of thinking of the characters when you write a short story as opposed to a novel? I guess because you're spending a longer time with the character in a novel, are there certain considerations that you have to make in terms of say, whether you can tolerate them as a writer?
Right, yeah. So I think you have to put a lot of consideration into your characters in both, I think. So like, even if a short story is really short, like a couple pages, if you haven't really thought about the character and have a good sense of who they are, it will come across and it won't work as a story. So whether it's a novel or a short story, you have to really think about that. But now when you're writing a novel, if you're writing sort of a character that might be seriously flawed or troubled, and after a few chapters of writing it, you don't feel like spending any more time in their heads, then you're going to have a hard time finishing it, and no one's going to want to read it. You really have to find a character in a novel that will reward the length, that you can spend that much time with them and still be invested in their problems or struggles.
Do some of the characters that appear in this collection, Cop House, have they stayed in your head for longer, say? I guess
sure.
I asked that question because I told you before we started that some of the characters I've been thinking about after I finished the story. I did wonder what happened to the guy in Blind Man after. I didn't really think of him. I thought of her.
Yeah.
And what her reaction would have been to reading this, because it is often disturbing.
That's a good reading because you get the story from his perspective and. Well, he's explaining everything. It's very clear that he's disturbed and his explanation is wanting. And so your sympathies should be drawn more towards the woman that he's terrorized. But I think as you read, too, you see where he's coming from, even if it's ridiculous.
Yeah, one wonders where she stopped reading it, say. If she read the letter at all. Sam, I when I talk to writers, I always ask them if there's wisdom in their work. I mean, I as a reader probably glean that more than, say, the writer realizes that there is any in their writing. For you, do you find that you've infused any writing that you've done with something that you've picked up or some revelation, say, in your own mind?
You cut off for a second. Can you explain that again?
Sure, yeah. Like, I mean, I found some of the stories in the book, they had some wisdom in them. Do you think that? Do you think you've imparted to the reader something wise that you've gleaned, say, from, I don't know, from your own experience, say?
Oh, that's really nice to hear if that happened. I didn't set out to do that. I wasn't writing a story like, okay, I've figured something out. I need to bring this to the world. I think maybe naturally some wisdom may come out of it as I'm thinking about the characters and what they're going through. And that would be great if it did. I never write a story with a set goal of, okay, I figured this out in my life and I need to teach everyone that.
A lot of writers do that, though. Have you noticed?
I don't know. I think a lot of the stuff I read, I'm not sure if I guess I don't know. I'm not sure what they're thinking. But I have heard that from other writers where they sort of, there's no mission involved. They're just sort of writing, they're thinking about the characters and just trying to write a story. And the sort of meaning or the wisdom of the story just sort of naturally forms itself around it. And that's definitely how I work. I've tried to write stories where I'm going to show everyone this, and it never works out.
I guess as well, writers get this question a lot, and I ask it even though I find it uncomfortable to ask, is whether how much of, say, oneself is found in the characters that they write. And in this book, I mean, there are a lot of characters that we could talk about, but is there one in particular that say, is like you?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think they're all, when I'm writing them, I don't think they are. I think I'm just in pure imagination land. But when I come back to them, I can see there's a lot of myself in them. When we've been talking about the story Blind Man, about the sort of stalker, I'm definitely not me, but there's, I have an intense fear of someone breaking into my house or someone stalking me. And so, like, that's never happened, but I just, that's such a fear of mine that it comes out through that. So in different ways, whether the character is like me or whether they're sort of embodiments of fears or just things I obsess over, I think there's the title story, Cop House, this woman named Ruth, and she's just beset by, she's surrounded by awful people. Anything bad that could happen to her does, and she kind of takes it in stride and has this optimistic attitude and sees the best in everyone to a fault. And I think I see a lot of myself in that. I'm not very confrontational, and I think I can be sort of positive to a fault myself. So I relate to her in that way.
So when you write, say, about your fears, mm-hmm. does the writing itself, does it, say, allay any of those fears?
Maybe in the actual process of writing it, like it's just confronting something that you're afraid of while writing, it feels like you're in control for a while. Mm. But once the story's done, I go back to my nervous self.
Yeah. The other thing I enjoyed about this book, I get, I've read a lot of authors over the years, and that I've talked to, I should say, over the years. What I particularly liked is I guess your perspective in terms of popular culture. I'm 30, how old am I? 35, 36? Can't even remember now. 36. A lot of the references, I guess, are ones that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I'm 34, so we're right in the pocket there.
Yeah, and so I mean, we're so influenced by I guess, everything around us. That a lot of, the pop culture that you consumed growing up, I mean, it does come through in some parts of the book.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there's, I think the most extreme example of that is the story DeRosa. It's about a man who's obsessed with the show Friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And he starts a letter writing campaign to keep the show on the air during its final season. And he writes his own Friends spec script, and it's included in the story. And that whole thing was just, my wife and I were rewatching Friends, and I was just wasting so much time watching it. I just had to put that to use, or I felt like I was wasting my time.
See, we both grew up with the show. And growing up, I liked it. I mean, it was the biggest thing on television, so you had to watch it if you wanted to, say, talk to people about it. And then I, you know, it's still on TV today, and you can see reruns any time. And I've looked in on some of them, and I realize now what a terrible show it is. I mean, do you feel the same?
I still like it.
Do you really?
Yeah. Well, I think maybe it's, I would watch it over and over again when I was a kid when it was airing.
Yeah.
And it's just so ingrained in me that I know the characters so well, and it's stupid. It's not like I think Seinfeld is a great show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you know, well written and groundbreaking. Friends is, you know, kind of silly and not as well written. There's a lot of jokes that fall flat, with maybe some problematic things in there from the time, but there's just, it's I don't know, it's like relaxing or something to watch those characters that I grew up with. I'll defend Friends.
Yeah, that's you know, I made like I see them from time to time, and then I, you know, I remember some of them because, you know, I like you, I saw them when they first ran on a Thursday night, and then when they went into syndication, and then I don't know, I can't stand, well, I can't stand the characters, and then I do find the show just silly and stupid almost
that
I haven't been able to watch a full episode, probably 10-15 years.
Well, maybe it's time.
It's time to revisit it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or not.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true too, yeah. Well, there's a lot of great television nowadays, and from that era that even, right?
Right, yeah, definitely.
You mentioned writing a novel now. Is that as fun? I mean,
to write or to read?
To write. I mean, a lot of writing is rewriting, and I'm assuming when you write a novel, or you have a novel in front of you, it's a bigger size of you know, text that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. I think it's in some ways more fun and in some ways less. Mm. So it's more fun because it's a bigger project, and you just watch it come together when you get deeper into it, or even at the beginning when you're just excited about your idea and if you can pull it off. And so it's fun just to be working on a huge project, like something so long. And but there's always times where I really doubt myself, and then there's times where I'm kind of excited about what I'm doing. So there'll be weeks when I'm working on the novel where I'm like, oh, this is so great, I'm so excited for people to read this. And then there's weeks where I'm like, this is so embarrassing, I hope no one ever finds the file on my computer, I should quit and find some other thing to do because it's just so bad. And I go between those two modes of thinking about it.
Say, do you write letters a lot?
No, I never write letters. I write, you know, little emails, I guess, but
yeah.
Why do you ask that?
Well, there are a couple of characters in Cop House that write letters a great deal. But you know, I was just thinking, I guess people of our generation, well, people older than us, well, the last generation and a half, two maybe, letter writing is not something that's in their life as it was, say, several generations ago.
Mm-hmm. I think the only time I remember writing letters was when I was in high school, like passing notes to, like writing letters to girls. That was a thing where girls would, you know, write letters to each other, and sometimes they'd write them to me, and I'd just pass in class, and I would, you know, try and be funny and impress them in my letters, and they're probably so awkward and horrible. Yeah, that was really fun at the time, and I'd like to get back into that. Maybe I'll write you a letter, Joseph.
You know, pen pals are something that, you know, that I guess they came into vogue once email started.
Right, yeah.
But then at the same time, they just don't have the feel as say, getting a letter in the mail. And it is exciting to get a piece of mail, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quaint now.
I just get bills.
We all do. And I think, yeah, maybe we'd be happier to pay them if there was a note, say, from someone in the big corporation, right?
Yeah, maybe. I think people working at the, you know, hydro company should write little letters to the customer.
And
happy to pay them.
Yeah, and letter writing, I think would I think satisfy a lot of people, because we're all so isolated, you know, because we work with our computers too much, or we think we're connected through social media, but we're not really.
No.
Probably the letter, if it did come back, would probably satisfy a lot of people in terms of connecting with another person, say.
Yeah, and I think when, like, social media really first started exploding, like when I first got Facebook, there was a kind of thing, like old friends would write back and forth, kind of like a letter, writing longer things.
Right.
Now it's turned into just maybe on someone's birthday, I'll remember to write happy birthday, and then they'll write back thanks, and then on my birthday, they'll write happy birthday, and I'll write back thanks, and that's the extent of our interaction.
Yeah, it's funny how we think we're connected because we see each other's photos and the sort. And then you do realize with social media that there's certain people that you want to see again, you know, say from the past. And because of social media, it's some people you just don't need to see anymore, right? Because you've kept in touch with them. A lot of us have Facebook for about 10 years now. It's funny how you just, you know, you don't really, you know.
It's like when you see someone you haven't seen for maybe 5 years, and you don't, that conversation, like, what have you been up to? You don't really need to have that anymore, because you know. You just sort of comment on their life instead of asking about it. Like, oh, I see you went to the beach last week, and that's great. And
I can't tell you how many conversations I have with people, say, that I run into. And they'll say, yeah, oh, you went here the other day. How was that? And then that's, you know, that's the start. It's not like, how are you?
Yeah.
But, I guess reading some of you mentioned DeRosa and the letters that fellow writes, mm-hmm. as well as the first letter in the book. And I don't know. Yeah, I do think that we will have to start a correspondence one day.
Yeah, I think so.
This has been delightful to talk to you, and as I told you before we started, I enjoyed this book a lot. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Oh, thank you so much. This was fun.
The book is called Cop House. The collection is published by Knightwood Editions. Its author, Sam Shellstad. Join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.